You're hanging out with some friends and putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. Nah, you live nearby. You can make it home okay. It's no big deal. What are the odds you'll get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst that could happen? Your insurance goes up? You lose your license? You lose your job? You total your car? You kill someone? Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic, and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now, looking for impaired drivers on our roads, to save lives. So, if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe, and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober, or get pulled over.
Good afternoon, Michael Malice here. Latha Bear, welcome for the next hour. We have with us probably one of my most requested guests ever, Eric July, host of For Canon's Sake, musician, pundit. What's the term I would use? Someone who does not suffer fools gladly on Twitter. And Eric, I have to offer you an apology for the first time on this show because everyone's been asking to have you on. I haven't gone around to it. You should have been on a long time ago. I think you're a complete badass. So I'm sorry it took this long to have you on.
Oh, dude, it's nothing, man. Obviously, I get asked same thing on my show. It's like, hey, when are you going to chat with Michael Malice? I'm like, ironically enough, people think that we don't know each other. And I'm like,
no, really?
Yeah, people actually think. I'm like, no, man, Michael, we're cool, man. It's just we haven't made it happen. But, you know, hey, better later than never, I guess, is the old saying, man. And I appreciate you having me on for sure.
So I have to ask something. So I'm on Glenn Beck's show every Friday, and every so often he'll say, oh, look, I have an anarchist friend. And whenever he says that, I don't want to correct him on his own show. I'm like, you know, Eric works on your network, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he knows better than that. I feel like he's doing that on purpose. So,
is it being an anarchist, as you are and as I am, what is your relationship like at The Blaze, which is Glenn Beck's network? I have a good relationship with everyone there. I think the thing that people don't realize is, you know, these different networks are different. Everyone at The Blaze is a really friendly, nice person, even though they're much more conservative in the kind of, you know, we're just going to vote ourselves free mentality, which I'm trying to do my best to knock out of them. What's your relationship like with everyone over there?
Look, man, I've had, just because of the growth in the last, let's say, decade or so many opportunities. And with Blaze, it was different. You know what I mean? Various networks had reached out to me, come on the shows, come on the network and all that. But this actually started back when Dana Loesch was way back in the gap when she was with Blaze. And now I think that hers was my first show that I was on. And just interacting with these guys from really Glenn on up and down, the thing that I appreciated so much about them is that at no point in time has it ever been a conversation where it's like, hey, man, you know, maybe our supporters, our followers wouldn't like if you said that, kind of steer away from talking about this subject. That has never, ever come up. Me and Glenn have hashed it out on various shows about like war efforts and stuff like that. And it's nothing. We'll chat about it afterwards. We'll have a good conversation. But never has it been like, hey, we need to slap a muzzle on that guy. So that's why of all like.
Wait, I got to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Because I have not had that experience.
You haven't?
There have been a couple of occasions when I'm about to go on with Glenn and the producer emails me to say, Glenn would like to remind you of who his audience is, which says to me that I'm much more of a dick than you are.
It could, that could potentially be the case, but like, seriously, it's never come up on any show that I've done on there ever. And it's kind of, I guess, the anticipation is that, like, I'll go on News and Why It Matters. We have a line of topics. Everybody knows that I'm going to be on the opposite end if it goes there. And I'm certainly not going to hold my tongue in that regards. But so the relationship with those guys has been amazing. They're legitimately, like, friendly people as well, like, you know, to kind of reiterate your point. But I just love the fact that, and I wouldn't have did it otherwise, if I couldn't be myself. If I could not be Eric July, the anarchist on that platform, I would have never done it. And also, I do feel like no matter where I think their audience is on certain subjects, they're ripe for this message.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So to be able to plant those seeds to those guys has been certainly a awesome experience for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting because from the outside looking in, people would think Newsmax, The Blaze, Fox, OAN are all the same. That has not been my experience at all. I've seen The Blaze audience, even though they're probably a little bit older than us, but they are far more open-minded and receptive. And what I've found is when they see you hate people that they hate, all so like in their head you're on the same team, and in that context you are. They are going to be much more receptive to your message instead of just dismissing you out of hand immediately.
100%, and that's the, you know, kind of, I know people use the term like reaching across the aisle. I never looked at it like that. It was more of, okay, we may see something, and this is how I look at that audience, is they see something as incorrect. I see that same thing as incorrect. Now, the solution is kind of where things get a little dicey, or where they may be on the opposite end. But oftentimes, and I don't know if this has been your experience with them or maybe other audiences as well, is that they've never even heard it broke down in a lot of the ways that we've broken it down. So it actually, you'd be surprised how much it makes sense. It's just like, well, I've never heard it worded that way. A lot of the other pundits, a lot of commentators, they would say that this is the solution. You're proposing something different, and that makes sense. I just never heard it broke down like that.
Yeah, because when one of my favorite things to do, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, and I strongly suspect you'd agree, is when you sit down and point out that the founding fathers were politicians, and that the Constitution was, in fact, a strong consolidation of federal power, and that the Articles of Confederation were working like they say the Constitution is supposed to. We're all taught this in school. The problem with the Articles of Confederation is no one could get together and get anything done unless everyone agreed. Now we have to have the Constitution where you have this kind of balance of power and checks and balances. Like, wait, they had that, and it worked so well that they went there. They said, screw this, we're throwing the trash.
I've mentioned that, and like, it's funny getting, it's not necessarily pushback, but getting people responding to it, because anytime the Constitution sort of comes out, come up, I'm like on the opposite side. And I've said many times, like, of the two, the more preferable document, if there was to be a governing one, was the Articles of Confederation. And they'll always go to, exactly to your point, well, they didn't have enough power to do this. I'm like, that's the point. That's the point. So yeah, it's even in I've had a lot of appeal.
I got to interrupt you, because when you say, wait, isn't that what you want, to watch them not enough power? And you can see this is clearly the first time in their lives they've had to think about this, because the point about the Articles of Confederation, they knew this since high school. It's been mentioned to them. It's not new information. And right away, their brain doesn't really, it's just kind of like this, when you ask a robot what love is.
Yeah. The same thing. But it's like that also with like the Declaration of Independence. You know, there's a, you know, the part where it says it's the right of the people to alter or abolish, you know, the government. Like, that's in there. That text is literally in there. And then, you know, I appeal to that, like, hey, this isn't irrational, because the people that you hold up as this like upper echelon of greatness actually agreed with me on this position more than anything. But I think a lot of it is on autopilot. You know what I mean? They're just it's just, this is how it was, whether they actually learned it that way or whatever it was, they just believe that solution that was proposed is the solution that has to actually be what is implemented. And that's just not the case. And when you actually break it down to them in those different various ways, you'd be surprised how many of them will, you know, if not agree with you, at least consider it, because they hadn't before.
And in my experience, and it's regardless of where someone stands politically, if you actually make a good point and cause someone to think about what they had taken for granted, they're going to find a newfound respect for you and appreciation for you. It's like, okay, this guy has something going. Let me hear what he has to say, because this is clearly information or a philosophy that I haven't encountered before.
Absolutely. Like, that's such an important part, I guess, from a communication perspective. Definitely, if your goal is to certainly plant that seed, is like, I meet someone there. I mean, it's like that with like me as an artist and me as a musician, like the fact that I am existing like in the metalcore scene or something like that, that in itself was like a communicative ice like breaker right there for people that otherwise would have never heard that, that like message, let's say this anarchism sort of, not that poser kind of anarchism that the you know, kind of left hardcore punk bands kind of do, but actually propose
be a real anarchist, go out and vote for Biden.
Exactly, not those guys, but again, it's like you present it in that way, and it was the same thing with music. They just simply never heard it that way, but they it read because of what I was doing, it had already resonated with them, so they were certainly more willing to listen to me than they ever were to, let's say, someone else. And this is why the creative differences that a lot of people have that are in our space, I never have been the type to get in the way of someone else in terms of, like, if they are an anarchist and maybe their little subculture that they belong to isn't mine, I don't get in their way of that. I respect it. And I'm like, if there's a way I can help you, kind of, even though that's not my thing, I'll do what it is that I can. I think that's such a necessary thing, because you're going to be able to appeal to people that I otherwise could not, and vice versa.
Let me. So there's one criticism of anarchism I get every week, which I bet you do not, which is, if it was anarchism, you'd be the first one killed. That's what they tell me. And I, first of all, I tell them, well, that doesn't mean it's a bad idea. Maybe it's just bad for me. But second of all, the idea that, like, anarchism means, like, the physically largest people win is really, if you look at it, like, primitive tribes, it's not the big dude. It's going to be the elder statesman, you know, who's running the show. It's such a bizarre. And also the idea that if small, physically weaker people are getting killed, everyone else in the neighborhood's like, well, they're not targeting me. So I'm fine with this.
No, I'm never not going to be the smaller person. So it's okay. It's such nonsense. And yes, I've heard not necessarily that in terms of the stature. It's like, they look at it like, for me, in my experience, is that you're advocating something that you would get the short end of the stick in the event that this was actually a thing. Like, if you lived in a geographical area that had what we advocate. And I'm like, so what? Like, even if I am, if I benefit the least from it, that still does not make it worth something worth striving for. I acknowledge the fact that the status quo right now, I have benefited from it in existence. I will be the first to tell you that. But that doesn't mean that what I advocate isn't something worth advocating, just because, yeah, maybe there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. That's how markets work. Definitely on the other side of it. Okay. I welcome that. Like, I certainly welcome that.
Let's get back to the show. So one of your quotes that everyone throws around, which I really like, which isn't as maybe as erudite as some of mine, is F them ho-ass roads. Not exactly Confucius. Can you explain how that quote came about?
So, all right. So as, like, it was that pocket of time where I had gotten so many eyes on me that otherwise I guess didn't really know who it was that I was, right? And, you know, you get these people who have really never had any conversation, argument with someone that's on maybe a different, let's say, plane politically, or, you know, whether it be apolitically or however you want to put that. So you get these weirdos who think that that is, okay, I really got them now. I'm going to reference these flat spaces that connect everybody, and he will not have an answer for that. So I would get that so much from these weirdos, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, how about fuck them? Like, roads all together, and now I don't have to have the conversation. But it was more so, it was like almost a tug in cheek, because in that same video while I was screaming, I referenced, like, not only older videos, because that was back when I used to do those. So I would do long form videos actually breaking down these sorts of concepts. Yeah. And I was like, you can refer to that. We know Walter Block did that privatization of roads and highways, where he kind of, it's a long form write up of him kind of theorizing of different various ways this could be done. There's no shortage of material that's out there. But I think it goes to show that these people have never actually interacted with. It's like they look to us as if we're like memes. We don't really exist. And they haven't really had a conversation with that other side. So they think that that question or bringing that up will stump any person that's on our side. I'm like, it's such basic bitch stuff that I've been there. I've done that. It's stuff that we've already gotten over the hump. Ask me something that's far more complex than the damn roads, man.
I think what it speaks to is there's this idea, especially in a democratic system as we have, is that you don't have a right to your ideas unless you can persuade me of them. and I'm just going to sit here with my arms crossed. I'm not hearing you. You know, it's like, oh, you say you're for anarchism, but you pay your taxes. Or, oh, you say for anarchism, but when you go to a restaurant, you sit down and listen to the rules of the restaurant, checkmate. And it's like, you're not interested in a discussion. True. You're just interested in drawing your line in the sand and playing gotcha and coming up on top. But you argue with people on Twitter a lot more than I do. Is that actually ever paid off for you?
Well, my interactions, absolutely. I made a lot of money. I'm going to be completely honest with you off of them. So, you know, we have my whole segment where I do like monetize your haters, where I have I'll really bring a nobody, no name cat on Twitter, and I will bring them on my show, and I will allow them to shoot themselves in the foot on live, you know, on live show. And I don't think I've, to be honest, have I ever had an experience in which, let's say, that person somehow was introducing something that stumped me, or they were actually even intellectually capable of arguing from their own perspective, yet let alone like defending their positions. So I made a lot of money off of that. And this is why I say, with those weirdos that you go back and forth with, it's really no point to do that other than to mock and shame them. Or you make money off of them. Outside of that, it's a colossal waste of your time. But you know, me, I've convincing them, maybe down the line, I will say this. I don't think I've ever said this publicly. So I said on your show, I did get a message the other day from a guy that I did actually debate, like on, like, not even lying, debate on the show. And I debated him probably a year and a half ago, right? And he had messaged me back and he was like, hey, man, I want to say that I apologize, coming off as a dick, all this other stuff. I really been thinking, you know, he had some experience in his life. And it's like, I would have been thinking a lot about some of the things that you had said. And I think I'm starting to get it and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, well, all right, that's pretty cool. So I guess it's a potential that can happen, because I'm more from the cultural aspect. And hell, I look at it even for me. I didn't start going down this rabbit hole until I was shamed out of my position. So you start arguing with people. That's back when I was an idiot college kid. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about, losing arguments and shit, people making fun of me because I'm just kind of reiterating what I heard people say. So I didn't really know what I was I didn't believe in anything. It was more of what I was told. However, that shame led me to look more into this, and that's how I got in the position that I got. So I'm not going to sit up here and act like, though, however, every person that I've debated has come to my side, or even most of them. I don't think that's realistic.
So you did say you went down this rabbit hole. What was it that was the first step? You know, there's a book called by Jerome Tichilli called It Usually Starts with Ayn Rand. What was that first book that was kind of like this light bulb moment for you?
Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell. So when youngster and I was finally looking into this stuff, I was still caught in like the racialism stupid stuff. So I wanted to learn more about economics, but I wanted to learn from Black economists, right? I was like, are there any out there? And I was, you know, looking up these various folks. And that's when I stumbled across the likes of, you know, rest in peace, Dr. Walter E. Williams, as well as, of course, Thomas Sowell. But Basic Economics is right there on my bookshelf back there, was the one that did it for me, mainly because it was all of these concepts in which I thought were very complex. And you had this like guy that, you know, has all the credentials in the world, but he's not even using the charts in the graphs or any stuff like that. It was just for the common man to understand. And the idea of scarcity, like stuff that I hadn't considered, but him breaking it down just really simply was huge for me. So Basic Economics certainly was that book that sent me down a rabbit hole, because that turned into learning about more like economic schools of thought. So of course, going down a rabbit hole, the different Chicago economists, and then of course going to the more Austrian side, and it was just a rabbit hole. One thing led into another.
Was there some book or TV show or something that you watched where you're like, oh, it's not that these people are wrong, it's that these people are intentionally misleading me?
Yeah, like, it's hard to say if it was a show. It was more for me, just the race hustlers, I think, in general. And that came, I don't want to like kind of shortchange that moment when it clicked that, you know, that can be traumatizing really for a lot of people, definitely if a lot of these folks are your family members. You know what I mean? That had been saying things that simply were not true, but it seemed like they were wanting to protect that status quo or perception of what you were supposed to have, and definitely in my case, and what you were being Black. And that was a huge point in my life. Like, wait a minute. So that was not true. All of that stuff that I had learned or I was taught was not true. And there's a lot of people definitely within this community, within the church, that I had to look to through a different lens, because I'm like, that's bogus. Like, a lot of that stuff is just certainly bogus. So for me, it was less about, you know, watching a show or anything. It was more about even like people that I knew and were close to me or family, just because they were still obviously perpetuating that. And it could be almost traumatizing, I would say, when you have to come to terms with the fact that for the large majority of your life, you've been lied to. And it was like that. And the reason that they were doing that, really, because they were protecting their own tails and protecting their own bacon. I looked at it like, if there's always these issues that persist and they really can't solve them, it keeps them where they're at. You know what I mean? And that's in these various positions of power, politically, social politically, whatever that it is, that they always have something to strive for and never have actually a solution to the problem. And again, that being even family members was really big for me. And it made me feel some kind of way.
Is there drama now? I mean, do folks in your family have TDS, like when you're home at Thanksgiving or Christmas, something like that?
They know not to talk to me about it anymore. Oh, okay. So I thank
you. So you won.
I won. That's a victory for me. So they know not to bring that up with me. I think a lot of it's just because intellectually they know they're not there because I talk about this stuff daily and they don't want to go down that with me anymore. So certainly I won, but it is always funny because I have those family members that tend to agree with me, but they wouldn't do it publicly because of our own individual family. And they're like, they're going to look at me some kind of way. Like, hey, Ken Folk, I got a cousin that's like, he's right there with me. He wouldn't dare tell everybody else that. But he's like, yeah, man, Ken Folk, I agree with you. I saw videos on this, man. I agree with you 100%. But he wouldn't dare put himself out there for like the family to actually believe or have him believe what I believe. He'd never put himself out there like that. But thankfully for me, I haven't had, even on my father's side, none of those guys' side have they actually came at me and was like wanting to have those conversations with me even being around.
Let's get back to the show. I'm curious, and I'm actually excited to hear your response to this because I know it's going to be entertaining. What were your thoughts on the Libertarian candidate for president in 2020, Joe Jorgensen, and her campaign? And now, let me get my popcorn. Hold on, let me get the microwave. All right, you have the floor.
Oh, man, where do I begin? This, it shows so much, okay, for the Libertarian Party that someone of course, I thought Gary Johnson was pretty bad, milquetoast, boring guy that they put out there.
But he had a credential.
He did. He had that.
And that's a big deal.
But that's my point, is that I didn't think it could get worse than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Certainly from someone that's uninteresting to this other person and Joe Jorgensen. So she doesn't get anybody, of course, enthusiastic about liberty at all. But then again, I guess, to be fair, I don't know if significant a portion of the Libertarian Party even cares about getting people enthusiastic for liberty. It's more like a social club for a lot of these cats, so they can kind of feel as if they're different. Hey, look at me. I'm in the middle of the Republicans and in the middle of the Democrats. Like, hey, I'm different. Like, that seems to be more what it was. But my thing is, if you are going to, I'm not a guy that's an advocate for the political process. Everybody knows that in terms of influence. That's not my thing. But my thing is like, dude, if you are going to go that route and you are someone that has nothing to lose, you're outside of the big two per se, what the hell are you doing putting someone like that not only doesn't get anybody enthusiastic, she can't even really push buttons like to get people to even talk about her or how like people feel about liberty. And I think with her, definitely with that comment that got her under a lot of hot water with people that were on different sides of this, with the whole, it's not enough for us to be racist or not racist, we have to be actively anti-racist. Like, who the fuck, who is that for, Joe Jorgensen and right. Joe Jorgensen's team? Like, who is that going to get enthusiastic of, certainly about your cause? But this whole boring, like, milquetoast, I think she's really represented, and I guess in one way you can put it that she's the perfect candidate for the Libertarian Party, because she's boring, uninteresting, unappealing. It's not going to move the needle any direction, really, unless it's in the negative. Not going to really move the needle, certainly towards liberty, not in her pocket of fame. It's never going to happen. And then you look at the Libertarian Party, and it's like, well, that's who they are. Uninteresting, boring, not really willing to even take a position that seems to be, it's going to be mildly controversial, but who the fuck cares? They're more interested in like, hey, we don't want to piss off those types of people because they may disagree with us on this. Like, so what? What's the point? You're not going to win. You might as well go out there and ruffle a little feathers to at least get a lot of people talking. So she is representative of that party and a lot of my views of how they try to utilize the political process to at least get people talking about these concepts that we generally hold true. And that's because I don't believe, definitely those establishment libertarian types, I for real do not believe that they actually care to at least attempt to see a net gain in liberty in our lifetimes. I don't think that they actually care about
it. You know how I put it? I say they prefer liberty, but they believe in the state.
That's a good point.
So yeah, it's like, it's kind of thing like you and I go to dinner, like, yeah, I'd rather have sushi, but like, you know, you're saying, let's go to steak. Okay. And you'll end up getting steak every single time. And I can say with a straight face, yeah, I prefer sushi, but I'm perfectly fine just, you know, having, and the thing is, it's just steak, steak, steak. And that's the state, you know, and here's the thing, even if you want to be someone who's temperamentally leftist and kind of sympathize with the powerless as opposed to empathize with the powerful, people should be angry about like licensing laws. Yes. Like you should be like, if someone is completely broke, and they're trying to make a living, braiding hair, or whatever these stupid things are, and now they're getting fined or worse, you should be angry about this, not be like, well, this is a shame. We should be talking about this. That's an opportunity there for that kind of mindset. And there was absolutely none of it. And what's even funnier is after that tweet that you mentioned, where she said, it's not enough to not be racist, we have to be actively anti-racist. I replied and I said, do you favor the, which just has been a libertarianism 101, do you favor repeal of discrimination laws? And she just completely ignored it, even though it got thousands of likes. Meanwhile, Joe Walsh, who is, you know, a former Republican TDS Trump person, I asked him that on his show, and he said yes. He said, absolutely, let the market handle it. So if that guy can handle it, and he's not even pretending to be a libertarian, you as the candidate should at least say something about this issue, especially as these laws are increasing. It's first it's race, then it's sexual orientation, gender, gender identity. Like, this is an actual issue, and you're just going to sit there on your hands?
Exactly. I mean, it's that's what I'm talking about with like the milk toast and the sort of uninteresting thing. Because even with some of the subject matters that you mentioned, there are things, be it licensing laws and various other laws that you can appeal to that we already know, whether it was by design or not, who it impacts more or less. You know what I mean? And I think licensing laws and those types of laws that are associated with fines tend to do that. But that's not even like on their ticket. Like they don't even want to bring something like that up in terms of what their talking points are. It's more of like an appeal to social justice as opposed to an appeal to, we know that this is what the state does. Like, yeah, it's not up for opinion. It's not up for dispute. This is actively what they're doing right now. And this is wrong. This is perfectly in line and with what we believe in terms of liberty and in terms of libertarianism. We don't even have to appeal to social justice to even do that. It just by design, that's just what it's going to do. Let's say if we did get our way in this regards, it would inevitably help this type of demographic or whatever. And of course you could lead with that, but they choose not to. Still to this day, they still choose not to do that. They're more interested in like being like, I don't know, I hate to use a term, it's so cliche, like the useful idiots, because I feel like that's what ends up happening anyway.
How are they useful?
Not useful to us, like certainly by any means. But when I say that, what I'm speaking to is that these guys look at, let's say I'm trying to think of something that like a subject matter that I can use as a prime example of these guys and their individual approach. I'll say where I'm at with like liberty and using kind of culture as my vehicle. That's me personally. I don't use the political process. So let's look at something like going back where we looked at fines and like licensing laws and all those sorts of things. like I mentioned earlier, those tend to, and I, there's stories about that. The Libertarian Party lead with those? No. Where X person was fined because they were braiding hair in their house during COVID. I actually covered a couple of stories where that like literally happened. There were people that were going to jail more so because they weren't supposed to meet up. That's a damn travesty. That's a crime. They can't go work out in public and they can't even do it out of their house. That's a crime. But the way that I look at it is that libertarians or people that claim to be exactly that are not interested in like controlling the conversation like at all. It's more of being purely reactionary to what everybody else does. I would like for once in our life, let's say, you know, you hear one of these like this tragic shooting that happened out there in Buffalo, right? I would for once like for people that value liberty to then control the conversation instead of always being on the defense. Because what ends up happening outside of that? Well, Democrats, leftists, as they tend to do, come by and they say, well, we need to ban this type of weapon, this type of magazine with this type of capacity or whatever it is. And whether they get what they want, they even made some strides, certainly with Trump in that regards with this bump stock ban, though it was far worse than actually that. If you read that executive order, for once, I would like us to be like, hold on. It's a damn travesty that this area or people in this area don't even know that this is an option because let's say it's illegal by way of the state. So basically they're sitting ducks in their own, in a damn grocery store for that matter. Yeah. That's an absolute travesty. That's a crime. People should be up in arms and pissed off about it. I can't, in all honesty, look at any kind of be a tragic situation or newsworthy story in which the libertarians have take control over that and like led in terms of the conversation and say, you know what, this is our moment and this is why you should believe what we believe for that matter, or advocate what it is that we advocate in getting the state out of this particular problem. Rarely do they do that. It's always on the defense and having to adjust really upon what the left is doing more than anything.
Let's get back to the show. One of the things you talk about a lot in your YouTubes is like comic books and comic book culture. I was a huge and remain a huge Legion of Superheroes fans. For those who don't know, it's a series that takes place in the 30th century and everyone's an alien from a different planet. And every so often they kind of reboot it as they do all these other things. And I was in the store in LA and for some reason I just looked at the cover. It was like a new number one, probably the 10th number one that they had because they keep restarting it. And for some reason, Lightning Lad or Cosmic Boy is now black. They just made him black. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is Legion of Superheroes. Shadow Lass is blue, Chameleon Boy is orange, Brainiac 5 is green, he's a computer. Quisling is an energy being inside a spaceship. You have, it's literal aliens from all the world, but it's like, oh, we got to make this a black person for no reason. Like, what are your thoughts about all this stuff where comic books are just being, you know, made woke for just, I don't even know what they're trying to accomplish with this stuff.
It's hard to say. To me, I think it's infiltrators that have convinced a lot of people with a lot of money that this is the direction that I guess the upcoming generation wants to go. But from an artistic, like not autistic, I guess you could put it that way as well, but artistic standpoint, of course, I think that type of stuff is lazy. Like it's lazy and obviously it's done with agenda in purpose. Like for me, I believe that, yeah, I'm a creative person. I like to think that I am one. And to see someone lead with, okay, well, let's take this various comic book characters and we're not going to make them more interesting. We're just going to swap them. Just why not? We need black representation. And I'm like, well, you got all these creative people. You think you could come up with something new. You have, you know, the setup for it. Why aren't you doing that? And I'm like, well, I guess it's because these guys have certainly no talent. But they're doing that over and over and over, and it's become so obnoxious to where I can literally name a new character upon which they do this like every week. And yeah. I had the great Chuck Dixon. He formerly.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's amazing. Obviously, Chuck Dixon, anybody that's familiar with him, you know, if there's a man that knows the Bat family, he knows them left to right. He's wrote a lot of that stuff, especially going through the 90s. And I had him on my show and we talked about this, and he used perfect term for these types of people that do all these various forms of what I call like tokenization. He called them comic book tourists is what he called them. It's like these guys aren't really interested in this type of stuff. They see it more as a vehicle to push whatever it is that they want to push. He was like, all right, so they made Tim Drake a character that he wrote like up and down. it's like I said, they made Tim Drake, now he's just gay for some reason, even though he was just,
well, come on, Robin's always been gay.
Well, that's true. That's
sleeping in the same bed.
Yeah, that's true. So they're always gay. But he was like, okay, now he's gay, but did they make him more interesting? I was like, right, no, right. It's just that he's just, now he's just gay. It was like, you see, that's what he's talking about. Like this, these guys aren't necessarily in it for art or having an, you know, some sort of intrigue by way of the audience. It's not what they're doing it for. They're about catching headlines. They're about whatever cause it is, because they're activists first, artists second, whether it be in, even in writers or whatever it is. And I love that the term that he used, tourist, because a lot of these guys, like you take someone like, I don't know if you know Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Of course, yes.
Of course. So he, there's no evidence, like, you know, of even a conversation that he may have had that with whoever friend that he was friendly with, that he was ever in a comic book, that it doesn't exist at all. And yet, randomly, they choose him to write Black Panther and Captain America. Why? Are there various other artists that are, excuse me, writers that they could have gotten that maybe they haven't wrote for Marvel in DC, but we at least know they understand, yeah, yeah, like who these characters are. That's not who they chose. They chose this guy, and, well, you know, he's won his little Harriet Beecher Stowe Award for social justice. He checks all the boxes. Let's get him to write. And he writes to me what to me is the worst Black Panther story ever, and this intergalactic Wakanda shit. Doesn't make sense from a continuity perspective, but that's not anything that he cared about. So they're not writing stories for an audience that actually exists. They're writing stories for an audience that they want to exist. And this is why I think they're getting their asses whooped by the Japanese, and not necessarily in the movie sense, but in the print sense. A lot of people don't know they're not dominating even the American market right now. Marvel and DC manga's doing that. And I don't think it's necessarily because the Eastern way of telling stories is just so much better. I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think that people have just finally said, we can't do this anymore. This is uninteresting. Not even just with the woke stuff, just from the, you mentioned the reboot stuff. That's annoying to me.
Yeah.
Like the fact that there's 17 volumes of this character's book, and you know, you go into the new 52 era DC. Well, that's no more. Now it's the DC universe or post-crisis. It's like, you can't even people that read this stuff can't keep up with this anymore. So they're not writing it for the audience that's already baked in. So it's a tragedy, but this is why, for me, I want to do my own stuff and hopefully capture some element of the market of people that just are interested in good comic books for that matter.
Yeah. If Batman and Robin are searching for the Riddler, he's got all these riddles. Like, what difference does it make that Robin would be black? Like, how does that feed into the story at all?
Doesn't make,
like, and because do they have this idea that like human beings are interchangeable because we're all basically the same, but then it's also important that we look diverse. It's like they're running around in their underwear with it, like every, you know, it's not like they're like on the street. It's right. Like they're covered in masks and so on and so forth. They're not, they stand out in a crowd, yep, like very much so. So it would be really be better if the Penguin were like a lesbian. Actually, that might work. If the Penguin was this like kind of fat, angry lesbian,
well,
I think
that
would work.
Toms. It'd be more accurate to the Toms.
Yeah, I think, but that would work. I think we solved the problem.
Maybe if they do it with characters that make more sense, I guess people would be more open to it. But there was Stan Lee had a quote. It was like right before he died, actually. He did something with some special with A&E, I think it was. I can't remember who it was, one of those various guys. He was like, yeah, I tried to use social issues like underlaying the plot, but I never wanted to like beat the audience over the head. And when you consider these various characters that made, no, he created them and didn't necessarily write the definitive X-Men.
Like, sure.
I think a lot of people point to like Claremont's era of X-Men and all of that. But even so, just a lot of this stuff, these people, they're reinventing the wheel. Because then when you see something like, for example, the X-Men or the various teams, like the New Mutants that were already affiliated with them, and you talk about all this diversity and all of that, like that had already been done 30 years ago, before I was, yeah, 40 years ago, before I was even born. That bridge was crossed. It, like, we don't have to, you're not doing anything special. But I think a lot of them do. They do. Like with that Batwoman show that got canceled, they're still right now, why they would put themselves out there on Twitter like that, I don't know, but the Batwoman's writers room, they have their own like Twitter, like verified Twitter, and they talk about all this sort of stuff, and they talked about it like, you're crazy if you don't think that this was, this show was so important for queerness and black people and black women. I was like, well, I don't know any black women that watch Batwoman for that matter at all. Like, and it's like, well, you're not writing these characters to even be interesting, because you're starting with a point of things that are, in the grand scheme, superficial stuff. I know people probably wouldn't want me to label their sexuality as that, but ultimately, when it comes to like how people view the comic book superhero or villain for that matter, that stuff is like pretty low on the list of things that they prioritize, of things that they would care about or find definitive about the character. Well, as for them, that's exactly what they lead with. And it's so predictable, it's boring, and they have gaslit a bunch of the audience and basically said, well, you know, they don't write stories for them. It's more like, what, you have to be good enough to read this book. You know what I mean? Like, we're writing it like, you got to be good enough for us. I'm not trying to convince you to read this story. Like, no, if you're a good person, you would read it. Like, if you care about diversity or and all those other concepts, you would read this story. You would love this story. And that's just not how this shit works.
Yeah, Batwoman has never been a successful character for DC. When she started out in the, or I think it was early 60s, it was just, okay, what would Batman be like if he were a woman? It's like, okay, instead of a utility belt, she had a purse. And instead of having, like, you know, things on the belt, she had like a powder puff that shot out clouds and lipstick that did something. It's like, but the concept's the same. What does her being a woman add to this at all? And same thing with the Batman show in the late 60s, when you had Batgirl as Yvonne Craig. Like, yes, she was eye candy, she was pretty and interesting, but it's like, so now there's, instead of two people solving this riddle, there's three. How does that add to the story?
Right. It's uninteresting. Like, and I don't think, to be fair, Mike, I don't think these guys have any sort of skill set. And you're a writer, you know that, to even like take the audience there. I don't think that they actually are good enough to do that. There's not a whole lot of people, now that I think about it, that wrote a lot of those definitive stories. That they may give like a story. I think Marvel did that, like with Jim Starlin or something. Like, you're like, hey, I'll have you do like this little one shot or something. But a lot of those guys are not around. Like, they're still around, but they're not facilitating anything regarding like current era of Marvel DC. It's a bunch of guys that really have no idea what they're doing. And I think their sales are indicative of that. And I wonder if they would ever pivot. It's hard to say on that, because it can't be this lucrative. I know now AT&T let go of their entertainment assets, and now it's like what, Warner Discovery or something.
Yeah,
I don't see that ever changing still with what that company is attempting to do with them. And Disney's gonna Disney, so it's gonna be interesting to see how far they'll fall for that matter.
Let's get back to the show. I mean, the other thing people need to appreciate, this is not new. In the early 70s, it was a disaster in terms of sales, but every comic book writer kind of just is on their knees, you know, blowing Danny O'Neill for this, because there was a comic book where Green Lantern and Green Arrow turned up, and there was this old black dude who's confronting Green Lantern, and he goes, you know, I heard on this planet, you save the orange skins, and then in this other world, you save the blue skins. And how come you haven't done anything for the black skins here? What do you say to that, Mr. Green Lantern? He's like, oh, I don't have an answer. It's like, whoa. This motherfucker saved the entire universe repeatedly. He saved a planet full of people, billions, from being genocided. And because he's not watching Selma, he owes you an apology. Shut the fuck up. Are you kidding me? And for Green Lantern to be like, wait. I saved billions of lives.
Yeah.
Myself. And they think this is like the most amazing thing.
Like they these guys that tend to do stuff like that, they think that they are really doing something special. So when you have Captain Marvel say that in a comic book, like the one that's Captain Marvel now, like Carol Danvers, the female Captain Marvel, and she's like, I'm not going to lose this fight to some 7-foot misogynist. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, okay, like. Dude, you're supposed to be this uber powerful being. I would think that's kind of understood, but why do you need to tell us this? This isn't some groundbreaking thing that you're funneling through this character. But I think if you talk to these guys and you look at their interviews and the way they discuss their own properties, they think that they are doing, they really think they are the most creative people in the world.
Yeah, nothing says creative by doing what everyone else is doing. everywhere. It's like when Annie was, like, they did blackface Annie.
Yeah.
It's just like, how is this different? It's, we know what Annie looks like.
Yeah. That tokenization is, again, that's the term that I use when you see all these swaps. But you know, they did that with that Percy Jackson or whatever deal that's coming out. One of the characters are one of the characters, of course, went from black to, excuse me, white, red hair. Oh, and I think it's blonde, but white to black. And you have the creator who is all like, well, this is the way that I intended it to be and all this. And Nick, what's his name? Neil Gaiman from Sandman. Yeah. Sandman, now Death is, even though we know literally we've seen it because you've described her as like big, this literally like white, like pasty white. Now she's black. Like,
oh, she's black now?
Death. Yeah, that's the thing. And upcoming, I think it's Netflix is doing it. And of course, he gaslit the audience. Nick Saban is like, Neil Gaiman was like, oh, well, we've always been woke. It's like,
but she's not, she's white, like you said, literally, yeah, like a piece literally of paper, white. Not like a human.
Yeah, like literally a goth white character. Like that, we know that. Like, it's not a secret. Like, we know you've described this person. Like, you can't just tell us that this was always the case. But I don't know what kind of money is that they getting slid on the side to. I don't know if he actually even owns like Sandman properties anymore anyway. But yeah, they're like, yeah, this is the route. It's predictable. You expect it. It's like, okay, they're going to do this new this character's this arc or something. And you're like, yeah, I expect there to be some sort of tokenization or something. And then they, of course, they do it. And then they come out and say, well, this is a big deal because now we have representation. I'm like, dude, I think at this point, y'all are overrepresented because it's literally in everything and we expect it. You're not doing anything special here.
Yeah, the idea of having like oh, we've never encountered gay people before. Oh, Robin's gay. I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah,
like,
no, of course. I'm really pushed. Oh, now what's his name? John Kent, Superman's son, is now gay. He even has like a rainbow inside, you know, inside the cape, because that looks great, right?
Yeah. Wait, are you serious?
No, I'm not even joking. Like
you're joking.
All right, I'm explaining it. John Kent, of course, Clark's son, they aged him up, so now he's grown. And he has a boyfriend, of course, has the uncolored hair, not predictable at all. And he designed a new cape for him. And that cape on the inside has like the rainbow and the trans flags, like on the inside of the cape. It looks stupid, for lack of a better term.
So he's super gay.
Yeah, he's a
there's gay, and then there's like Richard Simmons gay.
Yeah, like he's like, oh man, they're telling you. It's pretty in your face. But no, they seriously did that. And they think they're creative. I mean, I say the reason that was done.
Wait, if they were creative, he'd be shirtless, like a real gay person at Pride. That would be creative.
Well, they think that they're creative. But Tom Taylor, I think, was the guy that was writing that, son of, Son of Kal-El, okay. I think was the name of the story or something like that. And they announced that this was going to be a thing. They do their like CBR runs and all of that. And this, you know, they announced, hey, we're telling them gay. Okay, cool. Whatever. And like the next day, like they announced it, he's already doing interviews. And I guess he has like the S, you know, on Superman's chest, and it's like rainbows and shit. No. And like, it's the first day. Like, I was like, God damn it, man. Like, you're really telling us why you did it. You're not doing this to make any care. Hate to use the term virtue signal, but that's what it is. It's just a signal. It's just like you're doing, and he's patting himself on the back during all of his interviews. Like, it's so bold and so brave. It's about damn time that we're doing this. It's like, this is boring. And of course, it didn't do that well. I think that one book where he turned gay had an increase in sales, and then everything went in the tank. Like, the next issue is not even on the top 50. Hopefully it was worth it, Tom Taylor, but it's so boring, and a lot of this stuff sounds surprising because of how cliche it is, but no, these guys are talentless hacks, and this is what they're doing to this.
So, and here's the other thing, like off the top of my head, there would be a very easy way to make this an interesting story. There was the Batman series during the 60s, every issue, like there'd be some different change, and there's one comic, you guys can look it up, called The Rainbow Batman. Because what they would have to do is, these books were on the newsstand. You want to attract the eyes of kids, yeah, right? So they'd always have these ridiculous, like, why does Batman have a rainbow costume? And you bought the comic, and the story was, I think, like Robin twisted his ankle or something like that. So Batman wanted as eye-catching and flamboyant a costume as possible to distract from Robin to protect his identity. Okay, that's clever. If you had this story where Superman is pissed that his son is so rainbow, catching everyone's attention, you're going to out our family, and that caused drama. That would make sense. Absolutely. That would be kind of interesting. But I'm sure if anyone's gay in these comics, the only people who disapprove for any reason are Nazis.
That's true. Yes, the that it's it, even that part is the predictable part. Yeah. Like they, but I think it's that it's kind of like that with even Black people, for example, in the comics. Think about it. Like aside from what Black Manta may be associated with, like Aquaman, you can't really think of any like Black villains like that that don't only oppose other Black characters, right? There's no
Killer Croc's Black, isn't he?
Right. Well, but again, like. You they're not gonna lead with that. That's not like a thing.
That's now
you, you expect that's you know they're too chicken crap to even do something like that. But that's why they wouldn't like to what you're talking about with your story. Why they would never like lead with something that's actually creative. I don't think they have it in them as well. But also like I think this even with like North Star when he was like. Outed per se, though that was pretty early on in his career with like being associated with Marvel comics. Like it was, he still felt like a regular person, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like, it was something that anybody could pick up and resonate with the character because they were actually someone interesting. The storyline was someone interesting instead of just okay, well here's the character as he was, but now he's just gay and. Not even with that storyline, nothing's going to be interesting out of it. It's just like, oh, well, like with Tim Drake, literally all they did, oh, he looked the guy in his eyes and he asked him on it. The guy asked him on a date and he's like, yeah. And they ended the book. I was like, what the fuck?
But like, you know what? If Superman's son's gay, he's got super speed. He's going to be laying everyone at Pride from right. But that's what would happen.
Probably yes, but the thing is
the other thing I said this on Blair White's podcast. I said only corporate America can make sodomy and perversion seem downright boring. Like if you're gay and you have super speed, you're going to be having a lot of fun at these events, but they can't show it because their whole presentation of any kind of lifestyle is everyone's the same. So if it's gay people, they go on dates, they want to get married, they want to settle down, they're not, you know, being promiscuous as any two males would be.
Yeah, no, they don't. Again, they don't even have, I think, an understanding. I talk about just like Black characters and an inability to even understand like how they act and how they would really act if they were in this position or they were from this area and how they would act out of this. Like they, I think it's more so because they haven't had that experience. Like, so I don't know if Tom Taylor himself, the guy that wrote this, is actually gay. I don't even know that, but you know, you use the term like Mary Sue's, you see these like uber perfect, like that's often how these guys is. There's not a whole lot wrong with them because now it's like they painted themselves in a corner. Well, he's gay. Now you wouldn't want him to go through a traumatic event like what Batman had to go through, because then that would seem like you're targeting gay people, right? You can't do that. Like, this is the bed that you made. Now, would the story be more interesting if you did that? Yeah, of course it would. Never even people like ourselves would be like, oh, well, maybe that's something that I want to read, but they can't do that. So it's boring. It's literally boring. And I don't even know if people of that community are even buying these books.
Are you following what's happening with the Mises Caucus and Libertarian Party? The Libertarian Party convention is next week. Mm-hmm. The Mises Caucus's candidate, Angela McArdle, looks like she's in good position. She's going to, I guess, next week to take over as chairwoman of the party. Have you been following that? And what are your thoughts on it?
I've only loosely. I did a event for them where I spoke at one of their Libertarian Mises Caucus guys event out here in I think it was Irving. I spoke there, had a great time. Dave, of course, was there. We chopped it up and all of that. It's hard for me to say, this is what I will say. Obviously, a lot of those guys I consider legitimate allies. Like these are guys that we're right there. They know what's important. They backed everything it is that I've done in my efforts as well, even though I'm not affiliated with their party or anything. And I love those guys for it. I'm more so in it to see, because often these, the people that they're up against, they are not that fond of you, me, you know, Dave and guys that are, let's say, more notable in the anarchist sense. They really don't like us. Sometimes it's just because of made up reasons, but that's fine. They don't like us. So in the event that there is a shift of power, I mean, if you can call it that is what it is. I hate to use that to associate with those guys. But within that perspective, that would be an interesting thing. And I just want to see how those other guys react. I mean, I can, there's going to be some glorious memes out of that. And I guess that's what I'm in it for. But I guess I can commend them in their efforts, because I thought that was going to be a nearly impossible thing that they were going to be able to do, to try to in some way topple the establishment libertarians. That was an uphill battle always.
Are you white pilled or black pilled about the future of this country?
White, 100%. I don't even like that black pill energy around me when people
exactly
talk about, I encourage people to get like get that away from you. Those people are like, well, this is the inevitable. It has to go this way. It's going to be, you know, destruction and all that. I'm like, please keep that stuff over there. I don't even want that energy near me. And I'm always even trying to encourage my audience to look at it from that perspective. There's a lot of good. I look at it like this: just as quick as it got bad, it could get better.
Yeah.
Certainly. And there's a lot of tools that we certainly did not have. Even with the spread and the more flowing of information that we didn't even have even a decade ago, that allows us to even connect with people that are more like-minded. That in itself should have anybody more optimistic about the future, as opposed to allowing, which I think just being, thinking that these people that were up against these lousy people, like, can't be defeated is, I don't see how people could look at it like that, because I often think of them as losers anyway. And it was like, there's no way we can lose to these dorks, man. We can't lose to these guys.
So, I mean, it's as simple as looking at when some kind of horrible corporate journalist is out on the street trying to do his report, and people will go up to them and just tell them, you are the virus, you are the problem, you are the enemy. And they've never had to see that. And if they don't run the footage, it doesn't matter, because everyone's got a cell phone camera and they can run the footage, and it could be on YouTube fast, than that news reporter could have it out on his network.
Often people, the silver lining certainly with COVID has been more of a destruction for the corporate press. And that's been huge. That's been certainly huge. A lot of folks just aren't taking these guys seriously, not in comparison to what they were before. That to me is a white pill moment. That's something that's a beautiful thing, because we know that the handlers are a cabal, if you will, like they can't distort as much information if people don't see them as legitimate, those candlers as legitimate. That's a reason to be optimistic for the future. Certainly. So I don't like that energy around me, though. That black pill, those people that are just like, look, man, this is inevitable. We're going to lose. I'm sorry. Just chalk your luck. Like, nah, man, get that energy away from me.
And you know what? If we're going to lose, I'm going down swinging.
Why not?
So I might as well. So sit down and shut up and get away from me.
Thank you. Exactly. I guess go sit over there in the corner. We're not going to add that. I deal with this like on the cultural, standpoint with like comics and stuff, because I'm starting my own, you know, business with that. And there's other people that are independent that have started to see a lot of success using various ways of like crowdfunding and stuff.
Yeah,
that's huge. And a lot of folks look at like the Marvels and the DCs, and they say, well, they've destroyed these characters that we love so much, and you'll never be able to compete with them. And it's like, says who? Like, were they always that way? No, the Marvel and DC wasn't always Marvel and DC. And like I've said, right now, we've seen with manga, for example, and the Japanese, and how they are killing them in their own market, in American market. They're not winning right now. The Japanese are winning. So that in itself shows you that people, it may be an uphill battle nonetheless, but why not? And those people that look at it like it's just inevitable, there's nothing we can do, we just have to bend over and take it. I don't want that energy anywhere near me.
Eric, we're running out of time. What has been your favorite part of this interview?
Well, interviewing, I would say this, me being here has been my favorite part, because it's overdue. We know each other. We do all these events together, and we have not linked up at all. And I'm telling you, like, number one guy that people will say, hey, they just want to see us have a chat and shoot the shit, has been Michael Malice. So that's my favorite part, that we finally made this happen. It was long overdue, man. And hopefully it's, it's not that good. It doesn't go that long before we do it again.
You are welcome.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
There's a highway that stretches across the 93 days of summer, where worship isn't offered to the sun, but to the smoking tire, the S-curve, and the spin turn. And if you ride it, make sure you do it in a Dodge Charger, Challenger, or Durango. Because on this highway, the lines being blurred are the ones between drivers and demons. Welcome to Highway 93. Dodge is a registered trademark.